Hey everybody, T Watches a Scary Movie here. I appreciate you tuning in for another brand new episode. Don't forget to follow me on all of my horror channels where you can check out all the content I have coming out. You can do that by going to linktr.ee/tscarymovie. That's my link tree. That'll give you access to the YouTube page for the video versions of the show. Hit subscribe to your favorite podcasting platforms for the audio only versions of the show. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to my Letterboxd page where you can see my movie reviews and movie rankings throughout the year, and of course to my TikTok page for my short horror content, which includes premieres of movies I'm going to go see, as well as horror news and me just trying to be funny when I can be funny. Hit subscribe wherever you are watching, especially because, folks, this interview comes in two different formats. You might be watching the long version, which is going to be over an hour, which I love you for completing this interview because it's a great one, or you might be watching the three-parter that I put up instead. And if you are, you're going to want to make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can get links to the subsequent part two and part three of this interview as well, which I'll also link at the end of this video. Either way, folks, enjoy my interview with Heather Wixon. This is T and Friends Watch a Scary Movie. Everybody, and welcome to another edition of T and Friends Watch a Scary Movie. I have a very special guest join me today, and so glad to have her here on the show. She is the author of such books as Monster Squad, celebrating the artists behind cinema's most memorable creatures, Monsters, Makeup, and Effects, Volume 1 and 2. She has written for Fangoria, Dread Central, and TerraTube, a co-host of the Corpses Club podcast, which is available on all your favorite podcasting platforms right now. And she's the former managing editor for Daily Dead. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Heather Wixon. Heather, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. That was like a really awesome intro. I'm terrible at like talking about myself. And I was like, oh, I did these things.
You've amassed a pretty amazing career in your time as an entertainment journalist there. So we got to give those accolades up for you now.
Thank you. It's strange. Like I guess it's sometimes like you can't see the forest from the trees when you're kind of in the middle of it. And you're like, when you step back, you're like, oh yeah, I guess I did some pretty cool stuff. That's awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. So happy to have you on the show here. You know, it wasn't too long ago where you had announced like your retirement from like this profession. And I was like, nope, gotta jump on that like immediately, because like so many people speak so highly of you, and having like read a lot of your work over like so many years now as well too. It's like, yeah, absolutely, have to jump on that to get an interview with her.
Thank you. I'm going to try not to cry. But yeah, like it was just, you know, I've been sort of in these circles now for about 17 years, and I'm just sort of mostly retiring from like the junkets, the reviews and things like that. Like I kind of want to get back to just like going to the movies, because I just haven't had that experience in so long. And also too, like I just, a few years ago, I had to kind of take on a day job, and it's been a lot. And also just other book stuff going on. I'm gearing up to hopefully waiting to see how things are going with my day job before I move forward, and I have a vacation. So I'm like gearing up to do like my very first like solo documentary project. I've been a producer on documentaries. I've done a lot of special features on like a lot of indie releases. And I just was like, okay, I think it's like a now or never situation. So I just felt like I was like ready to kind of take that next step. But it's been strange. Like it's seeing friends like right now at like different film festivals, and I'm like, oh, you know, the FOMO is so real. But it's also what, for me, what's really exciting is like I've seen so much over the last 15 plus years, where when I started out, like there was like maybe like 10 people that you kind of went to that were sort of like the quote unquote authority on things. And I will never call myself an authority on things, even though I know people kind of come to me for that kind of stuff, but I just can't do it. these days, what's so cool about how things have like really grown in terms of like the social media spaces and things like that, it's like there are so many exciting voices out there these days that we're not getting the opportunities back when I was first starting. I mean, I think I can count on my on one hand how many women were sort of in these circles in horror at the time. Now I would say it's probably 50-50. Yeah. Just having more diverse voices out there as well. It really was like, and I mean, no offense to the guys who sort of were in it when I was there, but when I started, but like, it was a total like white dude sausage fest. And it was really weird. And so to me, like getting to see all these different people be able to like carve out their spaces and talk about these things that they really love and care about, like, I think that's awesome. Like for me, I was like, this community, this online community, this space, whatever you want to call it, is in a really good place now. I think like, I just love being able to sort of discover new folks, you know, see what people are writing about, coming at it from different perspectives. It's just really cool because again, when I started off, it wasn't like that at all. You know, I wish it didn't come to the fact that people had to kind of make their own spaces. I wish the doors had been open a little bit, but that's sort of the nature of the beast. And I love that people weren't deterred and they were like, no, I want to talk about these things. I'm going to do it. And they did it. And it's cool. It's really awesome to kind of see the growth that we've had. Cause I've seen a lot.
Is there anything that you would attribute that to personally? Like, cause you're right. I mean, looking at the space of the voices in the horror right now, we are getting much more, you know, female representation, plenty of women voices coming out there now, people of color as well too. You know, is there something that you've seen or at least that you've noticed that has shifted in your time doing this that has brought those voices up, you feel?
One, I mean, it seems weird to say this, but I think a lot of it does come down to the publicists, because I think back, you know, in the 2000s, they were sort of working with like a very small list. And I also think too, now that like being able to like create websites is a lot easier to find like your audiences on YouTube and TikTok and things like that. Like, I think it's really changed how a lot of like from the business side of things, how publicists and studios are valuing these different voices. Like, it's not just the big three anymore. Like when I came in, I mean, it was Bloody Disgusting, Dread Central, Shock 2 Drop. Like those were the big three. Fearnet was in there too, but they were a little different because they were their own like channel too, which was awesome. I miss Fearnet yeah. like every day.
Oh yeah.
I still have my Fearnet mug that I got like years ago. You know, and I know there's Fangoria, but back then Fangoria was more about the magazine. So getting to see how they've really pivoted as well, like with Angel, and getting to see her out there and kind of representing the brand in a very different way than we'd seen from Fangoria. You can see the shift, because the shift kind of comes along in like the mid 2010s. And that was when it was like, oh, we're really going to like allow people to kind of come in a little. And again, I'm not somebody who's ever going to really toot my own horn, but I've always been super duper open to talking to anybody and everybody who wants to be in this community, who wants to be part of this industry, who wants to do this kind of stuff. Because for me, we should be making room at the table for everybody. And that's like, I didn't realize like how much I did that until like I was talking to more people. But like, that's how I ended up at Daily Dead, is that I ran into Jonathan at Comic-Con one year, and it was while I was still Dread Central. And I was like, oh, you're from Daily Dead. I was like, I just started reading you guys. This is so cool. It was his first Comic-Con. And he didn't tell me this until like afterwards, but like, you know, we basically had a lot of the same schedule where it was like, you go to these round tables, press conferences, you're doing this and that and going all over the place, you know? So you're seeing a lot of different people. And like afterwards, like when I eventually sort of joined up over at Daily Dead, he was like, you know, he's like, you're the only person in the press circles who actually talked to me that first year at Comic-Con. And yeah. I was like, what? Like, that's ridiculous. But I've always like, I just always, if people are there to geek out over the same things that I am, like, why wouldn't I talk to them? I'm not better than anybody. Like, that's the thing. And so I think what's really cool is like, because again, you have, you know, people who are doing the writing, people who are doing hosting shows. It's like, there's so many different ways to come at it now, where that wasn't the case when I started. Like, I think that's cool. There's like, hosting like a weekly YouTube show, I don't think I could do that really, because I don't have that confidence. I can write like, you know, a mofo, but I can't sit and like be like, hey guys, I'm going to talk to the camera for 30 minutes because I freak out. So I just like, so that's good. I don't need to be in that space. There's so many other people who are so much better at it, who really come at it with like passion and love and joy. And like, that's cool. You guys go for it. Like, I will be over here doing what I do. So basically it's just kind of like these days, you know, I know that that area is good. It's covered, you know, people got junkets on lockdown. Honestly, like when it comes to like reviews and stuff, my go-to person is actually Megan Navarro over at Bloody Disgusting, because she knows her stuff like so well. And one of my biggest regrets out of all of this is I'm not going to get to see her at things, because I just adore her so much. And I think she has such a great aptitude for what makes a horror movie compelling. It doesn't have to just be about being scary. There's so much more to it. You know, so it's like, it makes me happy to see where we are, because I know what it was when I came in, and it wasn't easy. You know, but I'm proud of everything that I've done. I'm like, I sit there and I think about it, and I'm like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I did talk to them, or I got to go and hang out with so-and-so. And I was like, wow, like 8-year-old me who grew up like, I mean, I'm a kid from a trailer park outside of Chicago. Like, there was no expectations for my life whatsoever. I still think about that kid and I'm like, she would be like, what is this? Like, what did you do? And I still can't believe it. And I feel really grateful for the opportunities that I got. I feel really happy with the opportunities I had to make for myself, because I worked really hard for those. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's all just about celebrating all this stuff that I grew up loving and the stuff that I continue to love, because it was never about me. It was about the genre. And that's what drove me every day for all of those years. It was just being able to celebrate horror to the best of my ability. And even movies that I never, like, I didn't love, I never phoned it in. Like, because that was just, that would be a detriment to the genre as a whole. So I just tried. I really did. That's such a long-winded answer.
It's a good one, though. It's a good one. And you hit something that I kind of got stuck on a little bit there. You know, you're basically talking a little bit about gatekeeping, which is something in the horror community we see so much of. Like, there is an ample amount of gatekeeping in the horror community. And, you know, I love the fact that you're talking about that it should be, you know, it should be open and it should be accessible to everyone. What do you think really drives, like, the gatekeeping that can exist, not just in horror, but I guess in a lot of, like, in a lot of fan spaces? Because I know, like, for example, you and I are both big wrestling fans, and there's definitely gatekeeping in wrestling as well, too. What do you think drives, like, a desire for folks to say, you know, this is all you can accept, and this is the only good thing that's in this whole realm? Like, what drives that to what you've seen, at least?
Yeah, I think maybe it's a generational thing a little bit, because, like, I grew up, like, being a kid who loved horror movies and loved wrestling. So I had to basically fight constantly with everybody about these things that I loved and I was passionate about, because everybody always sort of talked down to me about them, talked about how stupid they were, like that it's garbage, it's fake. Like, so I've kind of grew up always fighting for these things, where these days when you're like when you're sort of online and you kind of find something that you love, you feel like you kind of possess it a little bit. And I think it's just, we build up like these sort of like litmus tests in a way online, where it's like, well, if you don't love this, then you're not really a horror fan. Or like, you know, I've, you know, been, you know, this fan for since day one, you don't know as much as me. Like, it's weird because I, like, for as much as, like, for example, like, there's a joke, because, like, since day one I was a Scream 4 fan, when everybody else, and there was so many people at the time, you know, we're also talking like almost 13 years ago now, or actually, yeah, 13 years ago, because it was April 2011, who were just like crapping all over the movie, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, this movie like is really ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. It bummed me out. So I was fighting for it a lot. And then slowly and slowly, I see people kind of being like, oh, Scream 4 is actually really good. Wow, Wes was saying a lot of interesting things. Oh, you know, this whole thing with Emma Roth, like, it was just interesting. And like, there's a part of me that wants to like scream for the rooftops and be like, I was here day one. What the hell? But here's the thing for me. I'm like, hey, this is cool. You caught up. This is great. Come join us. Like, you know, we need more people to like celebrate these kind of things. So I do think that it might be from that mindset of like, where I always had to kind of fight for it anyway. And these days where it's just like somebody discovers something on the internet and they think it kind of, they own it. And I don't think they, they just don't. You know, and I think also too, like as horror fans, we're always kind of used to sort of being marginalized in a way. So there is something about when the normies kind of catch on to something, because like they go hard. It's funny because like I work with a couple of folks in my office for my day job who are younger, and like they're not horror fans, but they're A24 fans. And I think that's so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, like I was ride or die as a kid for like New World Pictures or Canon, but I've never really seen it like to this degree where like they are like so deep for A24.
Like anything they're attached to.
Yeah. And part of me is kind of like, you know, there's more, but at the same time, I'm like, but at least you're watching. So that's kind of cool. Cause like, these are people that like last year, because they're like, oh, I love A24. I was like able to kind of convince them to be like, oh, you know, you should go watch this movie called When Evil Lurks. Cause I think you'll really like it. It's kind of in there. My one coworker who's like really, she's like, oh my God. She's like, we had to pause that movie like twice. And she was like, holy crap. I was like, yeah. She's like, but I loved it. She's like, that was great. I want more.
That's a win.
Yeah. So that for me, I was like, okay, cool. Like we're getting the normies to kind of come over to our stuff. So yeah, like I just, gatekeeping to me is so dumb. Like, I'm just like, why? Like, you, are you getting money from this? Like, no, like then who cares? So yeah, I mean, I think it's just like internet culture, a lot of it. But yeah, I hate that stuff. Like it's just, it's counterproductive.
I love that the movie you suggest to a coworker and friend is When Evil Lurks. That is.
Oh yeah. So good. I didn't ease them into anything. And I was like, oh, you've seen like Hereditary, Midsommar? Okay. Watch When Evil Lurks. You're cool. You're fine.
Like we're good.
Yeah.
I love it. So, I mean, talking about your love of like horror growing up and being in these spaces, you know, your latest book that you co-wrote with Patrick Bromley, In Search of Darkness, The Definitive Look at 80s Horror. You know, we have the 3-part documentary series, which is so good. It is such a great entry point, I feel, for anybody who might not have such a knowledge of horror and 80s horror at that. And it's such a perfect love letter because so many things that there's so many entries in there for movies that people know. And then a lot in there as well that, you know, even I myself like didn't know either. And it makes it such this great entry point. But I'm curious, you know, with the documentary and now this book, which I'm so excited to get as well. What is it about 80s horror that like drives that, like that pulls you into it? Because it seems to be like the era for horror. When you look back, you get a little bit of everything in there. What was it for you that built this love of 80s horror?
Yeah, I think I was lucky enough to kind of grow up during a time when, like, I grew up with a single mom, so babysitters were expensive, so she just brought me to stuff, and I was a pretty good kid in theaters. Like, I think the only time we had an issue was, like, I just was losing my mind crying during E.T. the first time I saw it, because... I mean, that was like earth shattering when you're like a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
But typically, like, I was pretty okay at movie theaters. So like one of my very first like memories that I kind of have that I still think about, like it's still in the back of my head, is like my mom took me to American Werewolf in London when I was 3, which is not a movie you take 3-year-olds to. And in fact, her best friend was with us and she was a big scaredy cat. So at one point she like leaned over to my mom. She's like, I think Heather's getting scared. I'm going to take her into the lobby. And I was like, in retrospect now, I'm like, no, you were scared. I was cool. So it was just like, my childhood, I was just kind of like open to it. Like my mom watched it. My best friend, who lived 2 houses away from me, her parents watched a ton of like sci-fi horror. So that was like a really good, like in, like her parents basically showed us like The Thing at 5, which again is not a movie. you watch when you're five, especially like shortly after. The worst part was shortly after I'd actually, or right before that, I'd actually been bit by a neighbor's dog.
So
between that and then seeing the thing, I didn't trust dogs for a really, really long time.
Understandable.
Yeah, that was trauma. But yeah, it was just like, and then also kind of coming off of the cusp of the 70s horror and getting exposed to that kind of stuff too. I mean, it was cool because honestly, when back in the 80s, when you were a kid, you kind of watched the movies your parents were watching because that was like the option. I didn't really grow up around cable until the 90s because we just didn't have it where I lived. And so whatever your parents were watching, you were watching. But it was cool because then like video stores come along and then you get to go pick out your movie and do that kind of stuff. And so you get to kind of like start feeling like you're like creating your own little journey. And for me, like it was honestly getting to see this one movie, and I wrote about it in the In Search of Darkness book. And it really is kind of like sort of the original In Search of Darkness, which was Terror in the Isles. And I was obsessed with this movie when I was a kid because it was like all these great clips. It was Donald Pleasance and Nancy Allen, who I loved, sitting in the theater talking about not horror movies, but terror movies. But it was a really good entry point for me as a kid because like I would go to the video store and grab the Terror in the Isles box, and the skull on the front of the box is made up of movie titles. So I would go through and try to hunt all these movies down in the video store and like watch them. And for me, that was like perfect. And that's for me what I love about In Search of Darkness, because I was a producer on the first installment. And then pandemic hit, I decided to go back to school, thing like just too much going on. And I was like, I sort of stepped away for part two and part three in that capacity, but I was still in it. But I love that idea of discovery. I love the idea of like people getting to like experience something for the first time, whether it's from the 80s, 90s, or now. Like, it's just such a cool feeling. And I love being able to sort of maybe open the door a crack for people who maybe otherwise they may not have seen a movie or may not have heard of a movie. There's somebody on Twitter right now, her name is Sonia, and she's already like watching movies that she's never watched before because of the book. So she was always tagging me and Patrick. So the first one she did was Dressed to Kill. She just did Sleepaway Camp last night. And I love it. Because also Sleepaway Camp for me was one of my favorite movies to bring to a sleepover because it would mess with everybody so badly. And my mom did get phone calls a couple of times. There was one because especially my friend's dad walked in during the climax of the movie.
Got it.
So there was a phone call. There was a discussion because my mom had no idea. It was just like, oh, you want to rent this movie? Okay, whatever.
It's like, sure.
And then, oh, you want to bring us to the sleepover? Sure, we'll rent it. And yeah, so it was a little awkward. But that was like the cool of it. And the cool part of it. And I think for me, like what makes 80s such a standout. I mean, I think every decade has their moments and has a reason behind what makes it so great. But for me, the 80s, it just feels kind of almost like the Wild West, but in a good way, because you were getting big, like you were coming off of sort of this prestige horror boom of the late 70s. So you were still kind of getting some of those movies here and there, but you were getting, it was such a great time for independent production studios. And I think that foundation was laid by like guys like, you know, Larry Cohen or Roger Corman, who showed that you didn't need to have $1 million to make a movie. You can go out there and make it with $10,000 if you really need to. You know, and that's how we ended up getting like guys like Bill Lustig or Frank Henenlotter. And it was just like, it was everything. Like people could really go out there and make anything and it would end up on video. And what's really cool too about like sort of the VHS movement of the 80s, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but one of the sort of people at the forefront of that was Charles Band from Full Moon, you know, and say what you want about like his business acumen, like he's had some businesses come and go. I had a friend who worked for him basically for DVDs for 6 months and was like, I can't pay my rent with DVDs. I gotta go.
Nope.
Yeah. You know, but the guy knew that home video was like the next step in the evolution. And he was really good at being able to get movies out there without like that studio backing. you know, because a lot of people might forget that, like, the original Halloween didn't come to VHS because Universal owned it at that point. You know, so it's really cool. Like, it felt like anything was possible back then. And, you know, so, like, when you see, like, 90s horror, you're kind of, things sort of stepped back a little bit because the genre did sort of have a decline at the end of the 80s. There was a little bit of, you know, quote unquote franchise fatigue. You know, in 89, you had a Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers movie. None of them did great. I don't think anybody would really call those, like, the best entries in the series either. So it was like, it was almost like you had to reset in the 90s. And I think also too, for as much talk as people want to say, oh, you know, art isn't political or whatever, you really saw in the 90s a lot of movies that were coming out in response to something specific. Like, yes, we had They Live in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was interesting because it wasn't super specific. If you just went in going looking for a sci-fi movie, those who knew it was about Ronald Reagan and consumerism and the yuppie movement, everything like that. Yeah. Where 90s, it felt a little more directly reactionary in a lot of ways. There was a lot going on at that point where a lot of cultural shifts were happening. There's a lot of not great cultural shifts as well. And so you kind of had horror pushing back against a lot of that stuff. You know, and then 2000s, you know, once you kind of get after 9/11, like, you get the quote unquote movement that everybody calls, and I hate this term, but they call it the torture porn. Frankly call it American extremism, because we were so desensitized, I think, collectively. And it was also, we were seeing what was going on in France with a lot of their films, and we kind of glommed onto it because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, it's such a cool, for me, 80s, it just was like, you could find something for anybody. Where 90s, it was kind of like, okay, hopefully you guys are going to like this, you know? But there's so many, there's so many cool things that happened in the 90s. But the 80s, it just felt like consistently, like, especially like doing this book, doing the research and seeing what was coming out every single week, all on all these different levels. It was like genuinely, like, almost at any given time, there was like 3 to 4 different horror movies in theaters at, like, almost every week. Like, that's so cool. Like, it was a great time to be a fan.
See, and I'm curious, because I love the fact that you mentioned, like, the VHS boom as well, and the way that video stores really kind of built that up. You know, there's a lot of talk about streaming these days and about, like, you know, what it's doing to the film industry. And there's merits on both sides of that. But I feel that when it comes to horror, especially, it almost seems a lot like the VHS days of the late 80s, early 90s, because especially in the world of indie horror, it's giving all of these other films, like, a chance to be seen and a chance to thrive. And I'm curious if, you know, for all the negativity that's out there about streaming right now, how you feel about it when it comes to horror.
All right, everybody, you can see parts 2 and 3 of my conversation with Heather Wixon later on this week here on TN Friends Watch a Scary Movie. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can get alerted for when they come out, and so you can stay attuned to all the reviews I have coming out for y'all as well, too. My name is T. We've been talking scary movies. Stay scared.
Boy here is a big fan of Fangoria. So if you want to check out the world's best horror magazine that's out there, get a chance to get yourself your own subscription, which I just got my first one back in 2022, and I don't regret it for a second. But if you want your own Fangoria subscription, or you like the Fangoria merchandise, then head over to the Fangoria shop and use my link if you want to save yourself some money, folks. That's an easy one to remember. Just go to shop.fangoria.com/AXDEW. Again, that's shop.fangoria.com/AXDEW, or use my specific code AXDEW at checkout. You can save 20% off your entire order, and that implies 2 subscription and 1-time orders as well. You don't want to miss out, folks, because with the magnitude of horror movies we've had released in the last few years, and with what we have on the horizon, Fangoria is going to be your number one source for all that great, juicy, bloody information in the world of horror. So again, head to shop.fangoria.com. Hey there, folks! Thanks for tuning in to T-Watch This Scary Movie. I appreciate you checking out another review or movie news, whether we're talking movies, TV shows, books, or games, whatever, it's all scary. Remember, you can check out new episodes every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on the YouTube page for video. That's youtube.com/C/Theron Reynolds Scary Movie. Again, youtube.com/C/Theron Reynolds Scary Movie. And you can check out the audio version on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Just search T Watch the Scary Movie or TWAZA. Don't forget, my name is T. We've been talking scary movies. Stay scared.